Welcome to Dakota Midday on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Carl Gerke. Coming up, Bishop Paul Swain of the Sioux Falls Diocese joins the program with his thoughts on new Pope Francis. And we'll talk with artist Harvey Dunn's granddaughter, Diana Rutherford. Her work is on exhibit along with her grandfather's at the South Dakota Art Museum. But first, the Cornerstone Rescue Mission in Rapid City is a large facility that includes transition houses, apartments, veterans care, women and children's homes, plus an emergency shelter and a newly renovated kitchen serving hundreds of meals a day. Lately, though, Cornerstone has been receiving some criticism for what some say are harsh policies at the shelter. Jim Castleberry is Cornerstone Rescue Mission's executive director, and he joins us now on the line. Mr. Castleberry, thanks so much for joining us on Dakota Midday.
Hey, thanks, Carl. It's great to be here.
Well, before we get too far into our conversation, maybe you can outline a little bit about what the work is that Cornerstone Rescue Mission does in Rapid City.
Well, it's a pretty broad approach to dealing with poverty and homelessness, but as you stated, we have a number of different facilities and programs. So the primary one, the one that most people think of, is the emergency shelter located at the old City Hall, but we also have transitional housing for homeless veterans. We have a drop-in center for any veteran that needs supportive services. We're also doing some veterans outreach right now and helping veterans, especially those with the potential of losing homelessness, keep their homes. We have a women and children's emergency shelter. We have an apartment complex that are for people coming out of homelessness. And then we have a daycare that supports those efforts and a thrift store where we generate some revenue, but also employ people in a program called Work for Success.
How big, when we're talking about Rapid City's homeless population, how big is it right now? Is it growing?
You know, that's such a moving target. As you're probably well aware, we do our point-in-time homeless count. Pinity County also does its own homeless survey, and the numbers seem to range somewhere between 500 to the high 700s, depending on the date and time. What we do know is that if we look at places like the school district, the emergency shelter, the emergency room, places where homeless people typically go for services, that the numbers are still pretty high, certainly well above 500.
Is this something that has grown since the economy took a downturn a couple of years back during the recession?
We certainly saw a spike. I mean, homelessness is a term that's pretty broad based, when in fact there's all kinds of subdivisions of that population. Most of the homeless men that we see are working homeless. They may have temporarily lost a job. They may come to us because they're coming out of the correction system trying to get reintegrated. But about 70 to 75% of those gentlemen go to work every day, and their stay at the emergency shelter is usually pretty short term. And then we've got the chronic homeless, and that's usually related to things like mental health issues and addiction. And Typically, we see these people, you know, month after month, year after year.
How many meals and how many people does the mission shelter each year, do you think? Do you have any numbers on that?
Sure. We're averaging these days a little over 400 meals a day, which is a lot. And we were doing that during the renovation as well, when we were serving out of a former restaurant in town. What that tells me is that even though we see some economic indicators that indicate a spike in additional jobs, we have a lot of unskilled laborers that still struggle to make ends meet. And then, of course, both in South Dakota, Rapid City, and the nation, women and children are the most vulnerable section in terms of finding affordable housing and jobs.
Now, there have been some articles, or at least one article recently, about the mission and its policy over who can stay overnight. What is the mission's policy on regarding the emergency shelter?
Sure. First, I would say, you know, that the upside to the article is it creates some awareness to an issue that, you know, the city has dealt with for a long time, and unfortunately we will probably continue to deal with for a long time to come. The mission's basic policy is that you can come and stay for 7 days, and there's no cost, there's really not much expected of you other than to obey the rules. And during that period of time is when we ask that you connect with one of three case managers who will help assess what the issues are and put together a plan to help you move forward. You know, we put close to 100 people back in housing every year, and you know, some people need a lot of support, some need very little. Sometimes it's one step forward, two steps back. But the bottom line is that for those that are able, there has to be some ownership, and getting a job certainly is one of the things that we put into the case plan. There are, although, instances where somebody has physical or mental disabilities that don't make that a possibility. A lot of people will leave and come back if they're under the influence of alcohol. They're not allowed to stay. Detox is the option. If detox is full, we actually switch. We'll trade one sober one over there for someone that's under the influence at our facility. But again, sometimes they don't stay, they choose to leave. So that's a piece of that population that's currently underserved.
So how do you deal with the chronic homeless then, the people that you mentioned that for various reasons can't find jobs or can't be employed?
Well, I think, you know, you treat each individual with respect and dignity and uniquely each time you meet them, but we don't have a master plan that's been incredibly effective. We see periods of sobriety, we see periods of stability with mental health issues, but that particular population, you know, has a huge inability to maintain employment, difficulty with their daily living skills. They don't have a lot of supportive relationships in the community. You know, they've burned a lot of bridges in and out of the correctional system. So you just continue to give it a try. One of the answers, I think, is to have more affordable supportive housing. And that's, of course, an economic challenge for any community.
Does this bring to the fore the need for more shelter in Rapid City for those people who do fall through the cracks?
Yeah, I think it's the kind with supportive services. So if you're poor and you suffer from addiction and schizophrenia, for example, if you're in a sheltered environment with supportive services, you're more likely, you know, to stay and be successful. And that's a lot cheaper to the community at large, to the taxpayers, than when they fall in and out of systems, which they typically do. You know, we've got a new initiative to try and deal with some of that in Rapid City, but there's more yet to be done.
What's your response to critics who believe that the mission's current policies push some homeless onto the streets?
Well, the mission's policy since its inception over 30 years ago, which makes it like every other one that I'm aware of in the country, is that, you know, we need you to be sober, nonviolent, and that there are other places that they'll have to go. I mean, we're not a medical facility, we're not a mental health facility, we're not a drug treatment facility, we don't have that level of trained personnel to deal with the issue. It's not that we don't care. And if it's, you know, if it were real cold out, we won't admit somebody as a resident, but they'll spend the night sleeping in the lobby.
The mission has a number of new programs over the last decade. I think you've mentioned some of them that helped to move people out of homelessness and help provide a bridge out of poverty to a new way of life. Are these programs hard to maintain?
Well, there's there's always the challenge of having enough economic support, not only to maintain, but to maybe do it better. But we're blessed in Rapid City that we have a lot of community support. I mean, it's a community ministry, and Cornerstone only exists by virtue of all the people that come alongside and help support it economically. We have well over 100 volunteers that help at all levels of the organization. So there's a lot of people concerned and connected to try and do it better, do it well.
How dependent is the Cornerstone mission on volunteers?
Well, we couldn't do it. At least we couldn't afford to do what we do now. You know, they serve the majority of the meals. They prepare the majority of the meals. They help with a lot of repair and maintenance. They volunteer at our thrift store, which, you know, is one of the economic generators of the program. So, critical role.
Now, the mission is a Christian based organization, as I understand it. And there are a lot of Lakota homeless. Is Lakota spirituality allowed inside the facility?
You know, anyone is allowed to come. We don't check for religion at the door, and we certainly surround people, we hope, with a spirit of goodwill and acceptance. Christ-like approach to it, but there is no rule about what you practice and what you don't. You know, they're all accepted.
So did you make any special efforts in reaching out to Lakota people who are homeless?
Well, we certainly connect with the various support services and tribal systems. I was recently down at Pine Ridge and White Clay, meeting with a bunch of leaders. There's a dialogue, but as you know, there's not much economic support that goes there, and there's a pretty big distance between the reservation and Rapid City. So I think a lot of what we see are folks that have chosen to live here but continue to fall through the cracks for a variety of reasons.
Does the work of Cornerstone change, again, particularly talking about the shelter here, does it change at all as the weather warms, with fewer people needing shelter, perhaps?
Well, actually, I think one of the misnomers, and there are a lot of them when it mm-hmm. comes to home, is for us in Rapid City, because we're a tourist trade economy to a large extent, you have a number of families that live in fairly inexpensive motels fairly close to the city corridor, and during the summertime the rates go up astronomically, and then of course then during the rally they're booked and unaffordable, so these folks have to find another place to stay, and it's often the mission.
There was a story in this morning's Rapid City Journal that hundreds of low-income families could lose access to rental assistance because of expected federal cuts under sequestration. Could that put more pressure on places like Cornerstone?
Well, there's no question. It'll put a lot of pressure on a lot of agencies. We don't have a lot of money as it currently stands. To provide economic assistance, there's always a waiting list for supportive housing. So, no question, you know, there'll be people needing help with food, housing, utilities. Let's hope that Congress can get it straightened out sooner than later.
How much room is there for Cornerstone to expand? It sounds like you're already doing a lot of work. You know, if there are more needs as they crop up.
Sure, I could drive my board crazy with all the ideas that I have about what else we might be able to do, but you know, it whittles down to what are the economic realities. Cornerstone doesn't turn people away. I want to make that point real clear. I mean, we've had pretty routinely over the last 3-4 years people sleeping on the floor many nights and in the basement. We'll make the accommodation as we can, but I don't see us building or expanding anytime real soon.
Hopefully
we won't have to.
Yeah. You mentioned the board. How does the board structure work in, as far as the way that the Cornerstone is managed?
Well, we have the board pretty actively engaged in paying attention to what we do. There are a variety of subcommittees, everything from personnel to audit committees. They help with the long-range planning. They obviously are the fiduciaries for our economic stability. So they're actively engaged. They allow me to run the day-to-day operations, but they certainly are actively engaged.
Over the next months or so, what do you see as some of the biggest challenges facing Rapid City and your work at Cornerstone?
I think the challenges remain fairly constant. I mean, they might change on a daily basis. You could have 20 people check in and, you know, 30 check out on the same day. It really depends. You know, if we were to get some severe weather, that always puts additional pressure on us. When we've had snowstorms, people stranded at the bus station usually come to the mission to spend the night. We'll adapt and we'll do what we need to do, both as a mission and a community, to deal with whatever we're faced. I think the federal budget is a tremendous concern to all of us, and not just from what it'll pay for on the homeless side of the issue, but in terms of economic stability and growth so we can create more jobs. Jobs and housing are key to dealing with this issue.
Well, Mr. Castleberry, I want to thank you for taking the time to talk with us on Dakota Midday.
My pleasure.
That's Jim Castleberry. He's the executive director of Rapid City's Cornerstone Rescue Mission. Coming up after a short break, Bishop Paul Swain of the Sioux Falls Diocese joins the program with his thoughts on new Pope Francis. And later this hour, we'll talk with artist Harvey Dunn's granddaughter, Dana Rutherford. Her work is on exhibit along with her grandfather's at the South Dakota Art Museum. You're listening to Dakota Midday on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Carl Gerke.